You are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. Makai Watch is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Hawaii Compassionate Care, Garden Island Hydro, Kauai Pharmacy.
Kevin Bako, MD of Hawaii Compassionate Care, offers medical marijuana certification exams at his office in Kapa'a. Information and appointments available at 808-854-6335 or online at HawaiiCompassionateCare.com.
Garden Island Hydro, assisting with all your growing needs. Nutrients, mediums, all-natural compost tea, lights, aquaponic and hydroponic components, systems, and setups. In the Puhi Industrial Park, Lihue. Family-owned and operated, open Monday through Saturday, 246-GROW, and online at GardenIslandHydro.com.
Kauai Pharmacy, an organic herbal tea farm in Kilauea, serving locally grown organic loose leaf herbal tea, raw extracts, and more. Kauai Pharmacy Tea Wagon at Na'ainaho Community Park, just outside of Kauai Mini Golf in Kilauea. Open Tuesday to Friday from 11 to 4 p.m. and Saturday from 9 to 1. 828-6525, kauaipharmacy.com. KAUAIFARMACY.com.
Mahalo, Hawaii Compassionate Care, Garden Island Hydro, and Kauai Pharmacy for supporting Kauai Community Radio.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
Oh, we ain't got a barrel of money. Maybe we're ragged and funny, but we'll travel alone, singing a song side by side. Don't know what.
Aloha, and welcome to Makai Watch, a program about the aina, defined as those things that feed us. This program focuses on information and opportunities for community involvement in the stewardship of our resources on Kauai. Makai, toward the ocean, as all things flow to the sea, and the sea is connected to you and me. The Hanalei Makai Watch program publishes the Hanalei Moon and Tide Calendar, now in its fourth printing. We have the 2015 Hanalei Moon and Tide Calendars, and they're fabulous. Please call the Hanalei Watershed Hui if you would like a copy, 826-1985. My name is Maka'ala, and I'd like to thank KKCR for providing this program and Laura Christine for engineering it for us. We'll be happy to take your calls after we've introduced our subject for today. When you're ready, call us at 826-7771. We'll be running our regular contest today, so listen for the question and win a prize. If you have ideas for future shows, please let us know. Today's show is about the Kilauea Point National Wildlife Refuge on Kauai. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has been involved in a very lengthy process to develop a draft, comprehensive conservation plan for this refuge. And today we're very pleased to have two guests with us to talk about the draft plan. With us in the studio today are Mike Mitchell, Acting Project Leader for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Kauai Complex, and Jennifer Waipa, the Supervisory Park Ranger at the Kilauea Point Refuge. Aloha, Mike and Jen.
Aloha.
Thank you so much for coming in on for the show today. Before we start talking about the plan, something that I like to do is I think our listeners would like to hear a little bit about you. So, Mike, would you start and please tell us a little bit about you, where you're originally from, and what brought you to Kauai?
Well, I'm a father of two boys, 15 and 13. I moved here from Florida about 10 years ago. I've been a manager for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for about 18 years now. And just feel very honored to be here as a steward of this land and helping to malama aina with great people here on this island, such as yourself, Makala. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Sure. I remember when you were fresh and new and green, and I did my level best to scare you away, and you didn't scare. You stayed and and persevered, and you're doing a great job, and we appreciate your willingness to come to the community with the things that are going on at the refuge. Jen, how about you? Tell us a little bit about yourself. You have an interesting last name.
Yeah, coincidentally, yes. So I'm from Big Island. My great-grandmother's family is from Kapa'ahu, which is near Kalapana side. It's now actually covered in lava. I grew up in Hilo, attended local schools there, graduated from St. Joseph's, and then went on to University of Hawaii at Hilo and earned two bachelor's degrees, one in speech and communications and the other in anthropology, and then actually got a co-op position with Hawaii Volcanoes National Park. So, went on to work in archaeology and the field of cultural resource management at Hawaii Volcanoes for, 16 years, I think, before I moved here to Kauai.
What brought you to Kauai?
Well, my husband's family is from here, and his Hanai family actually is from here. So I needed a bit of change of pace after having lived off grid for 15 years. So I needed a little more conveniences with three
understand.
Kids. So
those of us that have been there understand. So we know that you you also show up at various events too as part of the. What do they call the
Waipa Serenaders?
So some of our listeners will recognize your voice from a different perspective, a different angle, and that's a good thing. You know, nobody is just one dimensional. You're listening to Makai Watch. Today we're talking about the Kilauea Point National Wildlife Refuge Comprehensive Conservation Draft Plan and how you can include your comments in their process. We're happy to take your calls at 826-7771. So we asked you to come in today for a reason, not because we don't want to talk about the refuge every day, because one of us in the room certainly could, but you're going through a very interesting process right now, and it's called a Comprehensive Conservation Plan. And it involved a great deal of community input and community time, and I know that it involved a great deal of staff time trying to get this draft together, and many, many, many people within the Fish and Wildlife Service probably have participated in one way or another. But we had you here today because the comment period is now open, so that folks can contribute their mana'o and their opinions and their likes and dislikes for certain alternatives in the plan. And it's important for people to know that there are alternatives, and people should offer their questions, but they should also offer their opinions about which alternative they support. This is the time. It's not Bombay when the plan is POW that you get to say, oh, I didn't like this piece or I didn't like that piece. You know, in life, we don't get asked too often what we think about something like that, and this time you're getting asked, so you should respond. So the comment period is open, and I think it might be a good thing to just sort of start with an overall. Mike, what is the because there is a vision for the whole plan. There's lots of parts and pieces to this thing, but there's also an overarching vision for the whole thing. Tell us what the vision was for the overall plan.
Well, thank you, Makala. The vision was beginning to form back in 2006 with talk story sessions and then public scoping meetings and then draft alternative public open houses, and we really listened to the community. And I think the vision is to get cars and traffic and congestion off the point proper, the 32 acres of the point, and move that back so that when people come to the point, they get a feeling of serenity and of natural beauty and calm and get to enjoy the wildlife and appreciate the way the lighthouse grounds used to be. But, first and foremost, we're about wildlife and restoration of native habitat and conservation and preservation. And so some of the habitat management goals that we have are to manage additional acres of coastal mixed woodland and grassland habitat for seabird nesting and remove some of the invasives and do small-scale outplantings of native plants. And we also want to enhance some additional habitat on Crater Hill for native plant establishment and management for nene, grasslands for nene. And then we also want to protect sea cliff habitat from accelerated erosion, and we have a trail erosion project that we're in the midst of right now.
I was just going to say, why do we care if you have native plants out there? And I think there's three reasons, at least from my standpoint. You may add more to this. But from my perspective, the first and foremost is that the natives takes care of the land, and the mud doesn't go down into the sea, which we all know is not the best thing for the ocean critters. And it's also probably better for the birds. And for me, it's a teachable thing. If you folks are successful in restoring and planting natives on that stretch of what I think is pretty highly impacted, rugged terrain, then those are plants we can all learn from and say, oh, well, maybe they'll grow in my yard too. And they tend to take a little care. Local natives are not the easiest to grow, but it's a teachable thing. So, I mean, there's a lot of reasons to have native plants out there. Why are they better for the birds? Jen, can you talk about why they might be better for birds?
Well, they're definitely habitat for birds. Having natives is, I'm always going to promote that first. I mean, being from Hawaii,
sure,
being Hawaiian, it's, you know, natives are extremely important. Right now they are utilizing a lot of the non-native species that are growing up on the hillsides, but we found that things like aheahea are things that are plants that the red-footed boobies prefer to line their nests with, and we no longer have very many of those plants growing. So, yeah, we definitely want to try and promote.
So the birds are voted, too.
Yes.
So, that's interesting because we know that some of our creatures are easily adapted to changes and to new things, and sometimes they're forced into that situation. But some of the birds that you folks provide habitat for and refuge for are pretty rare. What's the rarest bird you have out there, Mike? Do you know?
Well, it's probably the a'o, or the Newell's shearwater, which is a bird that we're trying to... We've just created a predator-proof fence on Crater Hill, or Nihoku, for that species, which we are soon going to be doing some habitat restoration on a certain portion inside that fence, and then we'll do social attraction for that bird to try to bring in birds that are prospecting and that might want to nest there. And then we're also looking at doing some translocation. We're also going to utilize this predator-proof fence for the Hawaiian petrel as well. And so
these are both birds that are protected as well. So it's everybody's kuleana, but it's certainly because you have a, as I keep saying, refuge. This is a place that's supposed to be safe for them, and the plants would come into play, making the best home possible for them, and also providing a place, which, for my two cents, is part of your kuleana, for all of us to see them, to experience them, and to get to know them and learn about them so that we care and so that we support what's going on out there. This refuge, to me, is fascinating, and I don't think it's unique. I know you get a lot of visitors out there. Jen, I heard you say something the other night about more than...
Almost 1,000 a day in our busy seasons. Yeah, which is right now.
I guess I'm kind of feeling sorry for the birds. I'm thinking that's more than most zoos, right? So from the perspective of the refuge, you have several kuleana, several responsibilities. One certainly is providing the refuge and a place for all these things to safely be and multiply and hopefully graduate, if that's the right word, out of being endangered. But the other is to make sure that people have a chance to see an amazing lighthouse and something that the community has come together to restore. That was quite a fundraising project and effort to restore that lighthouse, and I know there are people on this planet who travel from lighthouse to lighthouse because lighthouses are fascinating to them. This is a beautifully restored and historic lighthouse. Tell us a little bit about what's happened with the lighthouse.
Yeah, and it's not just the lighthouse. It's actually the most intact in the nation. We have a series of structures that are historic that include not only the lighthouse, but the lighthouse keeper's homes, the three homes that they have, associated cisterns that belong to the homes, walkways that walk in between the homes, as well as the landing pad where, when the kukui, the tender kukui, used to load and unload equipment and and building materials for the construction of the lighthouse back in 1912, they would have to, you know, receive it onto a landing area, and so that also is a historic structure as well too. So it's a pretty incredible thing that we have, the station itself as well as the lighthouse. And the lighthouse definitely was a great effort among the community, and it's an icon that the community is proud of, and that the refuge is proud of as well too. And it definitely speaks to the power of people coming together in a great interest and bringing political help and just individuals from the little bricks that are in front of the
they're wonderful,
the lighthouse.
To go see the names and every family says, oh, we should
have
that
a brick
for our
there.
Mm-hmm. So it serves as an icon, as you say, but it also serves as a magnet. So it's one of the reasons that you have these thousands of people coming in there, which is the reason you need the plan, right? So the idea is to try and pull the cars back out of there so that the birds are better, so that the experience of the visitor and the experience of the birds is more about the place and less about the traffic and less about the fact that we're all visiting. I think it's certainly an issue and a quandary that any popular place has, right? I mean, I think of places like Yosemite that, they closed down a couple of days, you know, and they took all the cars out of the park altogether. The only way you can get in there now is by bus. And that was, so for the same exact reason that Mike just said, that was to provide the visitor with a certain experience of serenity and be able to listen to the birds instead of the car engines and the horns. If you just tuned in, we're talking about the Kilauea Point National Wildlife Refuge and the Comprehensive Conservation Plan. And the phone number, if you'd like to participate in this conversation, is 826-7771. So let's talk a little bit about this plan. It's received some attention, certainly in our community on the island, because there's pieces of it that are controversial or certainly worth having some discussion about. But there's a lot of other parts to that plan. So let's talk about the parts you want to highlight, you want to talk about in the CCP, as it's come to be called. Mike, what are the other pieces of this plan? What else would it do?
Well, I think we should talk about Kahili Quarry, because so far from the public meetings, that's been probably the most controversial aspect that folks are concerned. We've proposed and realized this is our best effort to put something on the table that folks can consider in a way that would balance the protection and conservation of the wildlife resources and increase public safety, and try to come to, like I say, a balanced solution there. But it is just a draft plan, and we've really been listening to the community, listening to Kupuna and community leaders, and trying to get advice as to how best to manage Kahili Quarry in a way that brings back a more family-friendly place where, I mean, it was said that this is a surf park, and it truly is a place where not only kids go to surf and recreate, but where older folks can go and watch their kids surf, and fathers can help train their kids by videotaping, and elderly and less able folks can get more easier access to the beach right there at the river mouth. And so we've been taking these comments into consideration, and we're still, like you said, within the comment period. It ends on March 27th. So we're going to be considering these comments and proposing possible other options to get at the same goal of protection of the resources, providing a safe and family-friendly place to go, maintaining the road in a passable manner. And so we're just welcoming comments at this time.
That's good. Okay, so this is a good chance for us to say, if the comment period deadline is March 27th, and you can email your comments to fw1planningcomments@fws.gov. And please include Kilauea Point NWRCCP in the subject line of the message. I'll say that one more time before the end of the show, if I recall. And if not, you can always call Kilauea Point, and whomever answers the phone will know that answer. I'm certain of that. So if you're going to pull the cars out of, the objective is to pull the cars out of the point, where are the cars going to stay? Where are they going to stop? Where are they going to go?
Well, we've got four alternatives that are proposed. Of course, A is the kind of status quo, the way we're currently managing things. And then we have three what's called action alternatives, B, C, and D. B is actually still maintains a bit of that parking on site and incorporates an optional shuttle from the end of Kilauea Road where the overlook is right now, and upon the parking lot down below being full, then it's a mandatory shuttle. So that's kind of one option that's still out there in terms of not necessarily pulling completely back off the point. Options C and D definitely do pull off the point. C is we've proposed a section of Crater Hill that's right along Kilauea Road. It's the southwest boundary of Crater Hill, and we've proposed to create a visitor welcome orientation center there, so that the visitor center would be there, the bookstore would be there, the parking lot would be there, the shuttle would begin from there. And then option D is a location within 1 mile of the expanded boundary of the refuge. And that could incorporate some area, even Mauka, of Kuhio Highway, because our expanded boundary is actually at very, very near to the slippery slide. It goes up as far
almost to the highway.
Exactly. So when we consider that it's the expanded expanded boundary, we could be anywhere a mile within that. We didn't want to go too far out from that to provide, you know, a timely manner for folks to still be able to get to the refuge and but to definitely create that better experience once you actually do come onto the refuge.
So your concerns and your issues there are very similar to those that all of our state parks are facing and refuges are facing all over the world. And some of our listeners are not on the island, and they'll recognize this syndrome, if you will, I think, from, you know, concerns about we love our nature to death, you know, we love our birds to death, or we love our bears to death. And so it's not an unknown quandary to be in, to try and figure out how to manage a place and provide public access without destroying it in the process. When you do an interpretive center, and I have not read the plan, when I've seen a few of the alternatives that I like, when you establish and accept a certain plan, will people be able to book reservations, especially if they're coming through an interpretive center, will they be able to book online and know ahead of time that they can get in and that kind of thing? Or
well,
is that?
We haven't actually gone quite that far in planning yet. It really depends upon which direction we're going to be taking once we've analyzed all the comments and brought that together.
So we
have been working on transportation solutions. And I think Mike can talk a little bit more about the whole, you know, funding of some transportation studies that we've had funded previously. But we're definitely going to be moving forward once a decision has been made and doing feasibility studies with regard to locations, cost of construction, transportation systems, and that sort of
thing.
That's the next step.
So are there days when the gate is absolutely closed and you're full? You just say we're full and nobody else can come in?
Well, no. We've closed the gates on Sundays and Mondays.
Mm-hmm.
And that was largely due to sequestration, just flat and declining budgets. We have not had the staff there like how we've had previously.
Right.
And so those are the 2 days that were closed now, whereas previously, you know, we were 7 days a week. But during regular, you know, public open times, 10 to 4. We're open 10 to 4 Tuesday through Saturday. Exactly.
Come one, come all. So at some point, I mean, that is a feature that we're considering for some of the state parks, in the state of Hawaii, and it's certainly true in other states I know, where there is a max, there is a capacity. We simply say, this is a place that is worth protecting, is worth seeing, and worth protecting, but that means that not everybody can come on Tuesday at 2 o'clock. It might mean that, you know, you have to choose another day or you have to choose another time, and that's one way of protecting some of those things that, you know, that we care about. You want to talk a little bit more about the transportation piece, Mike? I know it's complicated.
Sure. We, as Jen mentioned, we've had many studies done. I think there's been over 10 studies done in the last decade and a half. We had an alternative transportation study done in 2006, and then a transportation assistance group study done in 2010, I believe. And all these have recommended pretty much what we've put in our plan, and that is the options of what's might be available to use a shuttle and to get cars more effectively on and off the point. And so this feasibility analysis that Jen mentioned is going to be the next step after we come up with an alternative that is signed off by the regional director for this comprehensive conservation plan. That study is funded, and it will be a U.S. Department of Transportation, both Central Federal Lands Division and the U.S. Department of Transportation Volpe Center, which is a research arm. They'll be looking at that, looking at different locations and costs. And like Jen said, we haven't chose a location yet for Alternative D. And so these various options will be looked at. And then in the near term, you mentioned, will we be telling folks just to not come? We will be looking at near-term solutions on how to handle traffic, maybe possibly using intelligent signing on the highway, having a differential fee structure where folks would pay more in the highest, busiest time and less if they came and spread out the sort of the congested period. We're looking at improving traffic flow patterns and possibly increasing parking spaces. So there's a lot to consider in the near term, near and midterm, as well as long term.
There's going to be a process, folks. So the process will be going through the comment period, and then there's a service review, and then there's some decisions that are made. But the opportunity for you to comment on this draft plan is now. It's not going to be, oh, I didn't make it, I want to have my say later on. This POW is POW, and there will be other things that you can work with the refuge on, transportation and a few other things that will be coming down the pike, but this isn't going to go on forever. It feels to some of us like it took forever to get it going, but it isn't going to take forever to be POW. Mm-hmm. So that's a personal editorial comment, because I've been trying to get this thing going for a very long time. So we're going to take a little bit of a break and catch our breath. You're listening to Makai Watch, and today we're talking about the Kilauea Point National Wildlife Refuge Comprehensive Conservation Plan and how you can include your comments. We're happy to take your calls, 826-7771. And as usual, we will run our quiz, and Laura will try very hard to remember the answer. The question today is, besides a lighthouse, what else is a popular attraction at Kilauea Point National Wildlife Refuge?
826-7771.
Thank you. Thank you.
kaiki mai ka inu. Oi ai na guru bebe, oi a ke ona hona.
And we're back. You're listening to Makai Watch. Today we're talking about the Kilauea Point National Wildlife Refuge Comprehensive Conservation Draft Plan and how you can include your comments in their process. Thank you for your calls. We have a winner, and you know the prize. This is never a surprise, folks. I don't know when or how I'm ever going to change this, but for now, until, I don't know, October, it's an edition of the 2015 Hanalei Moon and Tide Calendar. Hey! They're not always easy to get. You should be thrilled to have it. So, thanks for calling. So one of the things that I wanted to talk a little bit more about, I'm big on place names and purposes of place, and I'm big on definitions of terms. And I feel really strongly that it's important that we remember that this is a refuge. It's not a zoo. It's not... it's not a place where we just go to play and run around. It is an amazing place, and we haven't talked about this, to see the whales. When the whales are here, it's one of the best places to see the whales, in my view, that is public property and not busting through somebody's edge. But it is a refuge. It's not Disneyland. And I think, although it belongs to all of us, and it's certainly funded with our federal tax dollars, and we have a say, it is a place that has a specific job. And we talked a little bit about this earlier. But, Jen, some of what you do is interpreting that for people. When people come there from all over the world,
yeah.
And some come to see the lighthouse, and some come just because they see National Wildlife Refuges, they have an eagle pass, and they just go everywhere. But some people really come to see the birds, and this is a home for the birds, in my view, above all else. And I want to let folks know that even when that gate is closed, you can stand on that overlook in the evening, especially if it's not too much moon, and it's just getting dark, and it can either be terrifying or or fabulous, depending on your perspective. Yeah. Because if you stand right there at that fence, the birds that's their time. They think the people are all gone, and they do what comes naturally, which includes circling around you as you stand at that fence. And so the refuge is bigger than the gate. The refuge is an experience that some people can have outside of it, but there's an awful lot of birds on that cliff. Are they all one kind of bird? Are they different kinds of birds? Or do they all get along?
Actually, they do get along. There's red-footed boobies at the end of at the overlook. That's probably the primary one that you'll see. All of those ironwoods and Christmasberry are all habitat that they utilize for nesting, and then during March, red-footed boobies are there throughout the year. In March, that's when we start getting the wedge-tailed shearwaters, and that's, I think, that exciting experience that you're talking about, hanging out at the end of the road, because I remember experiencing that same thing when I first came here, and just, I love that expression about the refuges, you know, is bigger than the gate. That's so great. You can stand at the end of at that overlook and just experiencing all the birds coming in and the noises that they're making and the scuffling that's going on. And then if you're lucky enough to hear the newels, shearwaters, mm-hmm. That's a whole different sound that's happening. And with the winds that are you know, drifting up and sometimes very strongly. So it is an incredible experience, even in the evening, especially in the evening.
Yeah, it can be a real cacophony. It's quite an extraordinary experience. So you have two. I'm not asking, this isn't a test. We're not going to go through all the list of the different birds. But there's one bird out there that has just become a new friend of mine that I didn't know much about, and that's the albatross. And that's because some friends of mine are very involved with the albatross, and they've done an extraordinary thing of putting a live webcam on a couple of albatross nests, and I'm addicted, completely addicted. I've learned more about them because I've been able to see them in their habitat and see what they do. But you, I want to talk about a recent tragedy out there too, because the albatross matter to us, and you just recently had a tragic event occur. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we have lots of nesting moly albatross up on Nihoku. And extending out towards Mokolea Point, which is just above Kahili Quarry. We've had an extraordinary year, nesting year, but we also had great tragedy with 22 albatross chicks missing. We know for sure, we can attribute one of them at least to a cat kill. We have it on camera,
mm-hmm.
and that's the evidence that we have.
It was very sad. I mean, 22 is huge. I mean, that's just an extraordinary number. And this is for a bird. Just to remind folks that this is a bird that says to us, the humans, this is a place I've chosen to come. So I'm telling you it's a refuge. I'm telling you this is my refuge because my home island is going to be blub, blub, blub underwater very soon. And so I'm telling you, this is my version of what the albatross are saying to me. I haven't gone off the edge yet, but I'm close, I'm sure. But they're saying, you know, no, we know, because they look like they know. They're going to need another place to be, another place to go. And they're saying to us, this is a refuge for us. So
that's a great point, you know, that, you know, us being a high island, we are a high island refugia for a lot of these birds that, as we see with climate change, could likely be underwater soon.
Right. So you are the Noah's Ark.
Yeah, exactly. This is the option for them.
So this plan is attempting to draw a balance, in my opinion, a balance of a safe and nurturing place for endangered creatures and those creatures that we hold dear and have some responsibility for, but also to be sure that people can get out there and see them and so that people get to know them, because I wouldn't have thought anything about an albatross when I was growing up. They were goony birds and they were in the way most of the time. So, you know, to get to know them in a different way and realize that they have their issues too and their needs as well. In the comprehensive conservation plan, we've talked about an expanding boundary. Would that expanding boundary provide additional habitat, additional place, or is that more about trying to transport people in a reasonable and sensible way? Would that create more habitat?
Yes, we do have an expanded refuge boundary that goes down into the Kilauea River on the western side of the river, the bank, and some of the sea cliff there. We've not acquired any property. The primary piece within that expanded refuge boundary is 162 acres of the Summers property. So yeah, that would create additional cliff seabird nesting habitat, but we're not, you know, the Fish and Wildlife Service deals with willing land,
of course,
sellers, and so we're not in a position right now where folks are coming to us saying, hey, we'd like to sell our property.
Right. No, what's dawning on me is we've had this conversation for, I don't know, I've been having it for a couple of weeks now at least, about what you began the conversation with about Kahili and the access and so forth. But what's dawning on me is that people want to be sure that they can get down there, but we need to be sure that the birds or that that's a place for birds as well. If it's part of the refuge, then that we need to be able to coexist and get along together too. So
yeah, that's a very good point.
800,000 cars down there is not going to help the birds much.
Yeah, and at Kahili Quarry in particular, we're going to put up a new fence down there that will keep dogs out. And like you said, we had an unfortunate incident. We've had a couple other in the past unfortunate incidents with dog kills, yeah, and dogs getting around the fence and going up and killing albatross and killing shearwaters. We need to make sure that that doesn't happen anymore. Part of the way we're going to do that is require folks to have dogs on leash when they're on the quarry site. We realize that the beach and the river mouth and that area is quite used by folks and their dogs, but they should realize that the wildlife and nesting bird resources on Mokulea Point need to be protected, and that dogs should be on a leash when they come on the quarry site.
Well, and it's something that many of us are a little sensitive about, but the fact is that all state beaches, dogs have to be on leash. This isn't a new rule, folks. It's just one we don't like much, but you know, in this particular setting, in this particular place, if the birds are there, we need to be sure that we're not contributing to a problem, because there's nothing more fascinating to a dog than a moving bird. It's in them, and it's not that they're bad dogs or that they're dumb birds. It's just that they don't necessarily cohabitate much. So when we talk about the Kahili piece, I know I participated in one of your talk story sessions that talked about all of the different users and the people that want to be down there, and there's some discussion about fixing the road too good. This is a balance that we're the county's addressing and the state's addressing. This is a tough one. Are you feeling like you're getting the word out to the community? Are you feeling like people are listening to the whole story and the whole issue, or are they just freaked out that you're going to shut them out? People still kind of freaked out, because I'd like you to address that. If you think people are still misunderstanding or misinterpreting, this is your chance to say, no, that's not, this is not what we're doing, folks, or it is.
I think there is some misunderstanding. I mean, we're not closing people out. We're not proposing to put up a gate and put a lock on it. And this place is going to be open 24-hour access to fishing. There is access. We're just talking about the quarry side, which has been a fairly impassable road for a long time. We're actually talking about giving more access, because we're going to make the road passable.
And, yeah, impassable is a kind term for not being able to see the sunlight when you go into that pothole. And the last time I was down there, it was terrifying. That was an e-ticket for Disneyland. So we don't need to be doing that anymore. I mean, you can't possibly come out of that alive very easily. So you want to hitch a ride with a local surfer truck and let him risk his frame, right? So you're going to make it passable.
To make it passable, we're going to help out the situation there, in that we know the Wailapa side is very congested. That parking lot gets filled, and people park way up the Wailapa dirt road, and it becomes a real hassle at times trying to get up or down that road. And so the quarry side will be an additional parking area, and so we'll open that up. It'll really, really help the Kahili Beach situation. And so the real question is whether the proposed hours that we have planned to be open from 6 a.m. to 5 p.m., whether that's going to work or not. And much of the comments that we've received have said that, you know, that's not really reasonable. That's not going to work very well if this truly is to be considered a surf park. Those aren't good hours for...
Well, even if it's for Kupuna, if we go down and make, you know, hibachi, or we go down and watch the water, or watch our maupuna, our grandchildren, or whatever, that's a pretty early hour. So, you know, and this time of the year, you know, it's light until, you know, 7 or so. So, yeah. So, but it's possible for that to be adjusted. This is a draft plan, folks.
It's absolutely correct. It is not set in stone. It is not determined yet. And we very much want to hear your comments, and they will be taken into consideration.
So one of the things that people say is, well, you know, it's the government. They're going to do what they want to do. No, they're going to do what you're asking them to do. They have to do something. So something will happen, something will be done, but the something you have a voice in, you have a say. So I want to give the email at least one more time. You can email your comments. First of all, where can they see the plan? Before they email comments, they need to be able to see the plan.
They can jump on our website, www.fwsforfishandwildlifeservice.gov/Kilauea Point.
Okay. And the whole plan is there, including all of the alternatives.
Yep.
So, exactly. You know, get yourself a cup of tea and a biscuit and save some time because it's quite a tome.
It is, but there are Cliff Notes versions that are also posted on there. That's called the planning update. So if you'd like to get a nice little concise summary, check out the planning update. And I think from there that might help you decide where you might want to delve more into with regard to the full plan.
That's very important because nobody's, what is this thing, 900 pages?
650 something.
Yeah. I tell you, it could keep the door open in a stiff wind, folks. This thing has some weight to it.
Don't drop it on your toe.
No, do not drop. So I want to remind you, you're listening to Makai Watch. Today we're talking about the Kilauea Point National Wildlife Refuge Comprehensive Conservation Draft Plan, commonly called the CCP, and how you can include your comments in their process. We're happy to take your calls, 826-7771. When we don't get too many calls, it means we're answering all your questions, and you don't have to ask them. And we've taken care of all of the controversy, and we're done now. No, I'm teasing. So one of the things I do want to talk about is the access down there and some of the uses that are going on down there that will need somebody to address them. The other side of Kahili Quarry is land that is managed by the land trust, and so you don't share a boundary, right? The river is between you.
Correct.
Right. So the Muliwai and the river is between the two land owners, if you will. Okay.
Yeah.
And so are you talking with them about potential uses and accesses and so forth, or is that a conversation that's taking place? Because that land trust is also our land trust, as you are our Fish and Wildlife Service, and this is our refuge. They are also our land trust. And so as a constituent of both of those parties, are you guys communicating?
That's a good question. We've started that conversation, and we're hopefully going to delve into that. We're waiting until this end of the comment period to receive the written comments, and so we're certainly open to this idea of community stewardship of the quarry area and what is meant by responsible access and how certain the land trust and others can help us keep that place in a way that that is family oriented, that is a good access, and like you said earlier, you know, it's difficult to try to figure out exactly how much access we should provide, and that's kind of a dance we've been doing for many years, fixing the road and then leaving it for a considerable amount of time to where it isn't passable, and so once we make it passable, the periodicity by which we maintain it is still open for discussion. I think we haven't quite figured out. Most of the responses we've heard have said we don't want every rent-a-car down there.
Yeah, and it's difficult to control it because it is, you are a public agency and it is a public asset and it is a public place to the extent that it's not damaging either the environment or the habitat or the critters that depend on it. So it's always going to be a balance. And it seems to me that when we start by opening everything up way wide and let y'all come, it's so much harder to pull back. So sometimes it's err on the side of caution and, you know, start slowly and carefully and get a good group of folks who can be stewards, who are from the place down there, and it will kind of find its own level. I was able to listen to Gary Smith, who is a respected Kilauea resident and very, very knowledgeable about the refuge, say essentially that You know, the community will step up. And I know one of the questions that Mike was going to ask, and I'll ask it for him, was, is there a role for something like Mackay Watch? Ironically, the name of the show. And, of course, there is. Of course there is. Mackay Watch is a state program that is available for any community entity that wants to gather and become stewards of a place, or even observers of a place, or, you know, it can be as big or as small as a community wants it to be. But that would be, you know, there are stewards on the other side. And Gary Smith was talking a lot about the Kilauea Neighborhood Association effort that's been coordinated on the other side. They've removed vehicles and campsites and all kinds of things. And this isn't a big area, folks. For those of you that are not on this island, we're not talking about a vast expanse of beach area like some areas of the West Coast or the East Coast. This is a narrow little place, and the accesses are all unpaved and not easy to get to. It's a small kind of, you know, little place that locals go to, and is becoming very popular. And so stewardship will happen from the community that goes down there. What I'm hoping people will do when they read the cliff notes of the plan is that they'll say, you know, that's something that I care about. That's something that I might, you know, be able to be a part of, especially when it comes to people that are practitioners down there, that are fishermen or, you know, whatever they're practicing, whether they're surfers, that they will take responsibility for the place. That's the whole idea here, folks. Nobody is suggesting that the Fish and Wildlife Service has all the answers for what should happen there, and they are not suggesting that they can manage it particularly by themselves. We know you can't.
Exactly. That's what I was going to expound on that as well, too. Yeah. I mean, we definitely, everyone knows our shortcomings in terms of funding. So partnerships really are what we're looking for in the future. It's the way we're going to be able to manage our areas and to, you know, expand whatever monies and opportunities we have, and yeah, that's something that came out I think really strongly with hearing all of the, you know, the comments and meeting with community folks, is that, you know, they have a very strong interest to this place. And one thing that came out from someone is that sense of place. When people have that sense of place and they can be there, they are willing to take on a responsibility, that kuleana, to that area. But they need to be able to get there. They need to be able to be there to experience while they're there.
That's right. That's right. And a key to that will be, and most of the Kauai'i folks know that signage is my thing. Laura's giving me the eye. It is my thing, because I think careful, appropriate, sensitive signage will make a big difference down there. Yeah. And I'll have an opinion or two about that, I'm sure, at some point. But I think it can play a role in providing, for one thing, the place names of that place. This is not Rock Quarries, folks. That's a good name because that's what it was. And in my day, that's what its job was. But the place name is
Kahili.
Kahili. And some of you know what a kahili is if you've seen the large round feather things around the king and queen. I mean, this is a special name. This is a big deal. This isn't just, you know, Joe Blow Park. This is Kahili. So gathering folks to a place means that they have to have access. So, you know that, and that's why there's not going to be a, you know, go, you know, gate or, you know, go sign.
Yeah, and I think, you know, with the access, I mean, there's some of us, you know, in visitor services, in interpretation, that can make a lot more presence, be more present down there. And, you know, communicating with folks that are down there, Kama'aina, visitors, whoever they are, I think it's a great opportunity to start sharing, you know, all the way around.
Yeah, I do too. So I want to say one more time that the plan is available, help me if I say this wrong, at www.fws.gov/Kilauea Point. And for those who are just fascinated with all things Hawaii but aren't from here, that's K-I-L-A-U-E-A point. And yes, it's on the island of Kauai. This is not the Big Island. This is not the volcano. It's a completely different zip code, folks. that we're talking about an opportunity for you to have a say in your refuge and what happens in your place. So no grumble, you know, like we say, no vote, no grumble, no comment, no grumble. Of course, we know a few will, but, you know, no grumble now. This is your chance. The refuge staff and Mike and Jen and others have been, you know, running hard here to get to all of the venues possible for you to know what's coming and for you to have an opportunity to say. Mike, you want to close us out a little bit? We've got a couple of minutes here, and I want to talk a little bit about the process. So everything stops. All comments are POW by March 27th. Mm-hmm. And then what happens? And try to put a timeline to that if you can.
Well, we'll have a certain time period where we will be going through the comments. And comments that are thoughtfully written with rationale behind a possible working solution that is different from what we've come up with are really greatly appreciated. And so we're really looking for good, meaty comments, not just, oh, I don't like that. Or so we'll be going through and considering comments. We'll be addressing comments. Then, depending on how significantly we change our proposals, we'll have to go back to the leadership in Honolulu and in Portland and propose some changes. They'll have to be accepted or slightly modified. And this plan will be signed off by the regional director. That person sits in Portland, Oregon, for Region 1 of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And then after that, document will be signed, and we'll start implementing somewhere probably summertime-ish.
Wow. It's going to be
this summer.
Tight timeline. Well, I want to thank Jen Waipa and Mike Mitchell for coming into KKCR today and giving us all this good information, and remind folks that this program is archived on the KKCR.org website. And if you want to share it with someone, or if you missed a piece that you want to hear again, please go there. Don't call me. Go there. And if something changes and we need an update, then we'll ask Mike and Jen to come back and talk to us about what's going on with the refuge at that point. And this is just for Kilauea Point National Wildlife Refuge. This isn't about Hanalei. This isn't about Hualiʻia yet. They're next. Trust me.
Stay tuned.
Yeah, stay tuned is right. Thanks so much for coming in.
Mahalo, Makaala. Thanks for having us.
You're welcome.
Aloha.
Appreciate it. Hello. He came over the hill. That wasn't painful. I'll bet you sure.